Aha, time to start. Hello, everyone. My name is Tobias Ternström, and I'm a program manager in the SQL team, the Microsoft Database Systems team, here in Redmond.
And I'm Travis Wright. I'm an Oracle engineer. Just kidding.
Yeah.
I know it's not funny.
That is actually not funny. Yeah. Okay. We work together on in a team we call Choice in the Database Systems Group, which is focused on that word, choice. Basically making sure that if you would consider running SQL Server in your app, you should be able to do that kind of however you want to do it. And make sure that SQL Server can be a modern component in a modern dev or DevOps environment. And that's really what this session is about. And we're going to try to be fairly demo heavy, show you what we can do, what you guys can do. And I would look at this not as, you know, you should go do exactly what we are doing, but look at it as a good example of what can be done. And hopefully you guys can start using some of the things that we're talking about more or less immediately after this session with SQL Server 2017. Even though it's in preview, especially from a dev environment perspective and test environment, you can start using it right now. We also have a program called EAP, Early Adopters Program, if you want to start using SQL Server 2017 already now in production. And I guess everyone have heard that we now have support for a couple of different platforms for running SQL Server. You can run it obviously on Windows Server still, but also on a couple of different Linux distros. And right now what we're saying is for support, we're planning for RHEL, so Red Hat Enterprise Linux, Ubuntu from Canonical, as well as SUSE's SLES. But obviously you can run it on a lot more distros than that, right?
You know, we really need to update this slide because with Docker support, there's a lot more platforms that you can run on, things like Kubernetes and Docker Swarm and Mesosphere DCOS. We've been working with Pivotal. So our goal is to get SQL Server everywhere, you know, and let people run it wherever they want, right?
Exactly.
Yep.
We just want it to be a good app or a good database wherever you would prefer to run it. And obviously, Docker is huge here. So our focus for this session is very much going to be on containers. So one of the big things we want to start out with is SQL Server is a component of your application, right? And that seems obvious, right? It's just one of your dependencies. It's the thing that manages some of your data, right? But I think a lot of us, when we do development today, don't really treat SQL Server itself as a component. Right? You treat it more as some server you have somewhere that you talk to through T-SQL, update and manage and so on, versus maybe you have some component that generates PDF documents. That thing you pull down, you use it, comes a new version, you just pull it down, it's part of your workflow. So could we treat SQL Server like that? And we think that's important in a modern development environment. So if you just take a step back and you look at developing an app, in a very kind of simplified world, right, you have something like this. You have your app code, obviously a bunch of different tiers, yada, yada, right? And then you have your database. But you obviously also have a bunch of dependencies, right? And you obviously also run SQL Server. So when you say that you release version one of your app, sure, it's version one of your app, but it's your version one of your app actually uses version 2.3 of the dependency and SQL Server 2017 RTM. Right? So that thing together, that's really your app, right? And same thing goes for microservices architectures, right? At any point in time, your app consists of whatever versions each of the microservices are. So when I release a new version, then it will look different, right? My app is some new version, and presumably some of my dependencies change. I'm going to pull in a new PDF generation component. Maybe I'm going to pull in a new CU of SQL Server. Maybe I'm going to pull in a new major version of SQL Server. So we want to make this really, really easy for you and not make it, remove all of the pain of treating SQL Server like some big monolithic server application. So where do you run this SQL Server component? Well, it is obvious. You run it in lots of places, right? You run it in your local dev environment. apparently 90% of all software development happens on airplanes where you don't have internet connection, right? So this is absolutely critical.
That's my world, yep.
Oh, sorry. So that's fairly common, right? It's great for running, obviously, your own local unit tests, so on, right? Shared dev environment is also extremely common, right? You have one server somewhere that all of the devs or a bunch of devs in a team connect to and use together, which has a bunch of issues. If you have a CI environment, then obviously SQL Server needs to run there, right? It needs to be part of that so that your tests can actually run. Let me get to that later, actually. And then obviously in your pre-production environment, when you're getting ready to deploy a new version, you need to run it, and then obviously in production, right? And all of these environments have very different requirements. And it's very, very interesting looking at containers. So container technology has been going on for some time, and it's going through, we think, kind of the same paces that virtual machines went through. And we also believe very strongly that containers will go the route of VMs, right? Now, more or less everything runs in a VM. Very, very few applications run on bare metal servers, independent of what that other company says, Oracle. And we believe very strongly that containers is heading that direction. And it started very much on the test side, right? So lots and lots of companies do development and have their tests in containers. Now, obviously, we announce a bunch of stuff related to containers. So more and more production workloads and so on are running in containers. And if you use containers with SQL Server, then you get all of this goodness of containers that can make SQL Server truly trivial to deploy. So Travis is going to show us a little starter first of how you can use SQL Server in Docker containers.
All right, let the demo fury begin. We've got a lot to show you today. So
we prepared until 3 a.m.
Yes, well, one of us did. Somebody went home and went to bed, but
at 1 a.m., that's right.
Slacker. All right.
But you continued.
So how do you get SQL Server running in a container? The first step is to go up to Docker Hub, and you see our image up there. And we actually very interestingly hit a very significant milestone today where we now have had, today, 1 million pulls of our Docker image for SQL Server on Linux. So, woo! It's pretty awesome. It's interesting because databases are the most pulled image by far on Docker Hub. Like, 5 of the top 10 image pulls are actually database images. So let's now go and just see what this experience is like, okay? So the way that you do this is you just do Docker pull Microsoft MS SQL Server Linux. Now, this is going to go out to Docker Hub. It's going to pull the image down. Oh, whoa, that was fast. What, is SQL Server like a megabyte? No. I already pulled down the image, so it's already cached, right? So I can see, yeah, I'm cheating because you never know with the Wi-Fi at these conferences. But you can see here that I've got my image pulled down right here. So now let's run an image. So new Docker run. We're going to pass a couple of environment variables here. The first one makes the lawyers happy, accept the license agreement. Next one is we pass in an initial SA password, and then we map the ports 1433 to 1433 so that we can see this container on the outside. We do dash D for detached, and then we pass in the name of the image that we want to run.
What does detached mean?
That means that as soon as I run this command, I get a container and I get my prompt back, right? Instead of an interactive prompt where I can see the output coming from the container. So now I've got a container running, so I can just SQL CMD. And you'll notice that this is interesting because this is also new. We have never had SQL CMD on the Mac until recently. So there you go. SQL tools are now available on a Mac. I just SQL CMD in just like any time you would do SQL CMD on a Windows machine or otherwise.
Including our ODBC driver is now natively available on Mac.
There we go. So we run select add-at version, and look, I've got a container running on Linux Ubuntu 16.04. Cool. Yeah, right? That's much better than our installation experience on Windows, wouldn't you say? Yeah? Sorry, guys.
No
more coffee breaks. You don't have time for that anymore. So now let's just do something similar here. Like
Travis doesn't drink coffee, so that's...
Yeah. Okay, so I got a database. So now I can do select name,
from sys.databases, go, there's my demo DB, right? Okay, so now let's do something else. Oops. Now I've got a, what is this file called? I've got this file here. It's just a simple node application. And this simple node application just has a typical connection string configuration here. It connects to SQL Server and initiates a request to select name from sys.databases. So let's just run an application against the SQL Server here. There you go, right? So simple. I've got a node application that connects to SQL Server just like it would if it was SQL Server running on Windows, right?
And it's worth mentioning the node driver. We used to actually make our own node driver. But there is an open source node driver written natively in JavaScript called TDS. So we decided to just go and support that instead. So we've now started helping with bug fixes on that driver. And we also, if you call customer support and you have an issue, we will support you if you run a community open source driver.
Right. OK, so now I want to show you some tooling that's available for cross-platform environments. And so here I've got Visual Studio Code running. And we have a new extension for Visual Studio called very originally MS SQL. I know, we're really good with the names, right? So I have the extension loaded, and if I just type SQL in the command palette here, I can see the different commands that are available from this extension. And I'll just do connect. And it's telling me that if this is it's wanting me to change this file format to be a SQL file. And then I got a cached set of connections. I choose localhost, and you can see down here in the lower right-hand corner, it said connecting, and now it's connected to master.sa. And now I can start doing things like select name from sys.databases. Hopefully this is big enough for everybody. Oops, that's too big. All right. And now I can run that. And we get an output here. It shows me there's my demo DB, right? So this is just one way that you can interact with SQL Server running on Linux, on a MacBook or on Windows or on a Linux machine. And this is a free extension. It's available on GitHub as an open source project as well. And we're also working on a new cross-platform database admin GUI tool, which will have a kind of similar look and feel to this. It'll be cross-platform, built on the same Electron shell. And it'll also be open source. And that'll be coming out here in the next short little while here. OK, so now we've just kind of seen that this is just SQL Server at this point, right? Nothing really different, actually. So now let's do something a little bit different here. So let's see. We've got a container running here.
These short little while, so are they measured in seconds, days, months?
Months. Maybe weeks. OK, so I'm going to drop this container that I had. One nice thing about containers is they're really ephemeral. You can just spin them up, spin them down, and get rid of them. And now we're going to go, and we're going to spin up another container, though. And this time, I'm going to do something a little tricky. I'm going to do a volume mount, where I mount a directory on my host here, where I have some backups, to a directory inside the container. I'm going to spin that back up. And just to kind of show you this, this is the backup directory I mounted here. And I have this file in here called wwi.back. I wonder what that could be. All right, so let's go now. And let's fire up another Visual Studio Code. And we will connect just like we did before. Oh, actually, let's do this. I want to find a file. Don't save. OK, so here we go. We're going to connect again to a localhost. And let's run this query. Oh, look, I have worldwide importers here, and it was backed up from Windows. Let's restore it on SQL Server on Linux. So while that's restoring, let's kind of note here that we're able to use native Linux file path syntax to restore the databases to a Linux directory. And keep in mind that Worldwide Importers is our kind of sample database that has all of the most advanced features of SQL Server 2016 running in it. And we're able to simply restore that to SQL Server running on Linux. There we go. So select star from sys databases. There's wide world importers. Notice the demo is gone because I got rid of that container. And I can now use it. I can select some data from cities. There we go. We're going to insert a city. You can see that New York City is there now. And I can delete. So I've just gone through a full CRUD cycle of using SQL Server on a Linux container, on my MacBook, and yes, I work for Microsoft, and this isn't like some weird psychedelic dream that you have, right? This is actually all very real, and it's basically just SQL Server. I think that's kind of the beauty of it, is that you can take your databases from Windows and bring them over, or back and forth, and you can upgrade databases and so on, and we'll see kind of more of that in action here in a minute. So.
Thank you, Travis. Yeah, so this is actually very important, right? When we started out on this kind of choice path with SQL Server, making it available on Linux, Docker, Mac, and so on, the most critical thing that we had to deal with was making sure that it's as good on these platforms as on Windows. It's not interesting for us to have some, you know, limping SQL Server available on Linux. So from a performance, scale, feature perspective, it needs to be the same level as Windows. And we did something pretty big a couple of weeks ago where we announced the first official TPCH benchmark, which is a data warehousing benchmark, with SQL Server 2017 running on Linux. And this is the little TPCH benchmark. It's a 1 terabyte database. But it's interesting, this first benchmark, what we call like a sneak peek or a sneak preview, SQL Server 2017 on Linux beat our SQL Server 2016 on Windows benchmark or performance for data warehousing by 6%, right? So this is not really a statement that Linux is faster than Windows, but it is a statement that SQL Server 2017 is even better than 2016, independent of if you run it on Windows or Linux. So if we go back into this kind of CI/CD, continuous integration, continuous deployment cycle, this is kind of a typical picture you would see, right? You do development, it starts at development, you write code, at some point you push it, that sets off a build process, runs tests, and at some point you check into some other branch, goes through the same thing and does deploy, right? But this is very much a simplified thing, especially if you work a lot with data. Because a data developers or a developer working with data-centric applications, it doesn't really look like this.
That happens the first time.
Exactly. This is when you write the app, V1 of the app, the absolute first. Then it starts at development. But from a data perspective, it's different. It really starts from production, right? So what is the first thing if you're going to, you know, start a sprint and you're going to do development? Well, you want a copy, probably sanitized copy, of your production database. So you have the very latest that customers are working with, or maybe a sample, one of your customers or something like this, and that's what you want to do your development on. So it really starts in production, and then it goes to development. And then there's a very important thing in between, which is pre-production. And pre-production is different because we have these two types of data. We have production data, and then we have sanitized data. So in the development environment, we can't have, you know, the transaction table include the credit card numbers, right? We can't have social security numbers, probably names. Lots of these things shouldn't be part of this. So there needs to be some sanitation process that happens before we get to the development environment. And likewise, before we go and deploy and run our pre-production tests, that needs to run on real production data. That shouldn't run on sanitized data. So let's say we're starting off on a new sprint. And the first thing that we would like is to create a dev and test environment so that every engineer in our team can just pull down the latest environment and start working. And that dev and test environment, from a database perspective, should probably include SQL Server and also the latest, if you will, production, sanitized production data. And then engineer goes and pushes changes. That automatically starts some continuous integration pipeline and starts running the tests. That continuous integration needs to run using this production data that you've just cleaned and created. So that's an example of the dev environment, and then you have the test environment. And we can see this, we actually do this for our JDBC driver. So we open sourced our JDBC driver last fall. And if you can see here, unfortunately right now it's a little bit embarrassing because the tests are failing. That's probably Travis's fault. Yes. It's even called Travis CI, this thing, so must be Travis's fault.
Yeah.
And you can see we have two of these CI pipelines, one for testing on Windows and one for testing on Linux. And you click this, and we scroll down a little bit here. We're scrolling on.
Here it is at the bottom. There you go. Very bottom.
Oh, there. Sorry, where? Oh, there we go. So what does this do? Well, it starts with, at some point it gets to, after installing Maven so that it can do build and so on, it Docker pulls our Linux SQL Server Docker image, and then it starts that, it shows the image, and then it starts running the tests.
I like and, the image name there. Kickass. Kickass Montalcini.
Yes, yes. And then if you go to the right here, we can see that the pull of the SQL Server image was about 46 seconds. So this is very interesting. It runs the full pipeline from a completely clean environment. It downloads SQL Server just like it downloads other components like Maven and so on. Jade Unit and you name it. Then you probably have other tests running as well. So every time you do check-in suites, I don't know about you guys, but for us, some of our tests take days to run. And some of them takes minutes. So every time you check in, you have some smaller set of tests that run. And that probably wants to run on a smaller database as well. So probably when you create the dev and test environment, you create multiple Docker images, right? One is the pre-production environment that you're actually going to use to verify a deployment. One is maybe a big image with a big database inside it for maybe, you know, people that work on perf things or, you know, user experience and so on that need a big database. And then many other developers need a smaller version of the production database more to run unit tests and so on, right? So you create these N number of images that you need, and you use them depending on what you need. So at some point, the sprint is finishing, and we need to create the pre-production environment. Again, then you can see these two, create dev and test and create pre-prod, they kind of happen at the same time. Right? You grab the latest, a new backup from production, you restore it, that's your pre-production environment, right? Because that has non-sanitized data. And then you go and sanitize, so then you get into the big dev test image, and then you delete a bunch of data somehow, and that's your small dev test image. Then it runs the pre-production tests. If it fails, you go back and fix. And otherwise, you go and deploy, and that's the CD part of the pipeline. So what we want to show you is essentially this and how you could make this work today.
All right, so containers really enable you to treat SQL Server like a component because it allows you to separate the binaries, the execution environment for SQL Server from your data files, right? So the container contains your execution environment and the data files are possibly stored inside the container if you want, or they can be outside of the container if you want to have persistence. And the nice thing about this is it just makes it super easy for people to get started, right? It's basically just like a file copy. You just Docker pull and it's like copying down a SQL Server and you just start it, right? It's just so easy to use. And what we're going to show you today is how you can combine SQL Server with your data files and potentially other files that need to be going along with your SQL Server. So if you have like some kind of third-party extensions to SQL Server or maybe a .NET CLR binary or any of those kinds of things, you can actually ship that along with your SQL Server so that it goes all the way through your CI/CD pipeline. And in that way, you're testing exactly what you're going to deploy. And that's one of the major benefits of containers is that you test what you deploy. And the other thing is that it makes SQL Server and your data composable, right? So what we'll see today is that we'll create multiple different kind of snapshots, if you will, of our production environment very quickly and easily. And it's in a way kind of composable. And then we can easily share those composed data environments with our team. We can spin up and spin down environments as we saw a moment ago with the demo that I did. And that also makes it very easy for you to update your SQL Server binaries in production. And I'll get into kind of the scenario of how that happens. But you don't need to take a long time to run a setup.exe to update your production environment if you're using containers. And I'll kind of show you how you can actually upgrade in production in a matter of just a couple seconds and have a much shorter upgrade cycle as you go through these different environments.
And I think we will talk a little bit more about production later. This is something that's fairly new. So we believe very strongly that it's going to happen. And we're working closely with community, a bunch of different organizations and customers to figure out what is kind of the right way to run SQL Server on containers in production. So
one thing to kind of keep in mind here is that whenever you start a new sprint cycle, you want to update your dependencies. It might be some JavaScript library, it might be some other code library that you're bringing in through a NuGet package or whatever, But really, SQL Server is just another dependency that you have, and you want to make sure that you have the latest SQL Server binaries, and that you test those all the way through your CI/CD pipeline, so that when you get to the end, you're ready to deploy it into production. And the very key thing about this is that today, traditionally, people have a SQL Server, and it sits out there in production, and it's separately maintained by an operations team. And the development team can't touch it, they can't access it, they can't do anything with it, and they can't actually sort of take a snapshot of that particular production SQL Server and somehow replicate that in their test environment or in their development environment. And what we're proposing is that by using images, the developers can grab the production data, they can use an image of SQL Server that they want that has a particular set of the SQL Server binary, some particular version. They do all their development and testing using that particular version of the SQL Server binaries, and then they push it out to the production. And if you think about it, Microsoft basically has a CI/CD pipeline too. We produce SQL Server builds and Docker images every single day, and every month we push them out to a public Docker registry, Docker Hub, and you can grab it. And so if you want to think about it, you can actually have like these contiguous CI/CD pipelines. Microsoft has a CI/CD pipeline, and we pop out a new image every month, and I'd like to get to
you. Do we pop, or do we?
Oh, no. Uh-huh. Oh, we do, well, yeah.
To use some other word at some point.
So, okay, yeah.
With two O's.
Mm-hmm. So then you pop out this this new image, and then your pipeline can pick it up and start to run it through the entire CI/CD cycle.
Okay, cool. So let's see if we can try to figure this out. I'm going to go and actually create the whole dev test environment on my machine or on a Linux VM running in Azure. And then Travis is going to use that image and be the engineer. So, and I'm not as cool as Travis, so I use this non-MacBook thing.
You got a Linux VM, though.
Ah, yes.
That's true. Mostly cool.
Mostly cool. Okay, cool. So I'm in the bash shell on Windows, so I'm going to SSH into my Linux VM. There we go. And then we're going to start here and see what we're going to do, if we can make this a little bit bigger. So the first thing is I have this, it starts from this backup from production. And that backup in this case comes from a Windows server. And it actually comes from a SQL Server 2012 running on Windows, just to show kind of the combination here. So that's been backed up, and it's been moved to Azure File Storage, where we store our backups. So the first thing here I'm doing is mounting this Azure File Storage inside my Linux VM. And next, I'm going to go and pull down the SQL Server container. You'll see it's already pulled down. And after that, I'm going to start that. And we can see it's been started and running. You can see I have a little bit of a sleep here in my script. This script you can run as just one automated thing. That's just to wait for SQL Server to have a chance to start. And
I think that's probably important to point out is that normally you'd probably just have this running as like a Jenkins job or something. Periodically, you're building all these images as part of a job, right? But we're stepping through it one, you know, command at a time just to show you the process we built out.
Exactly. So we can try and connect, and you can see it's working, right? Select that version. Another thing that we can see also here in the Docker image is just what the file structure looks like. So if I docker exec it0e, what is it, bin bash?
Mm-hmm.
There we go. So now I'm on a prompt inside my Docker container that I just started. And we can just see that the SQL Server files are located in var opt MSSQL. Data is where you have the data files. So you can see this is just a traditional MDF-LDF files, exactly the same format as on Windows. So like Travis mentioned, we can copy these files back and forth between Windows and Linux, backup, restore across. We can even do an availability group with replication between Windows and Linux. And then you can see the actual SQL Server binaries there in opt MSSQL lib. So that's what's inside my Docker container. Okay, and now this Docker container is my basis for this environment I'm going to go and create. So first step is to restore the SQL Server database from production.
And I'm clearly in the wrong directory. What is it? DevOps, Docker. There we go. And the restore is simple, nothing special. It's downloading that file off of Azure, actually. And then I have to use with move because of the fact that the file is on, by default, we put the restore in the same paths as where it was backed up. But obviously, it was backed up on Windows. So C colon program files don't exist on Linux. And you can see also it goes through all of these backup steps because we're now upgrading from SQL Server 2012 to SQL Server 2017.
Upgrade steps.
Upgrade steps.
Yep.
So next step is I'm going to go and commit this image because right now I have a great image for running my pre-production tests. Right? It has my production data, but it doesn't have it sanitized. It's kind of the original data. So we'll commit that and list the images. We can see that we now have the DB pre-prod image created. So next step, I'm going to do sanitation. So we can look at, this is a simple kind of university application that has a table called person in it. So we can see we have a couple of people here. I list the first 10 people. And the sanitation script is very interesting. So we use, for sanitation, we use, I'm from Sweden, so we call it Norwegian encryption.
You should see the Swedish encryption. It's two lower.
Yes, yeah. But it's very advanced. So we're on that. And this is the large database now. So it's I think we have a million people in this person table. And then let's rerun the select, and now we can see with the Norwegian encryption what it looks like. So next step after we sanitized it, now we have a great image for our development environment and test environment. That's the big image. Yep, question?
Does it support always
on
encryption?
Oh, so the question is, does SQL Server on Linux / Docker support always on encryption? You mean always encrypted?
Yes.
So SQL Server on Linux, Docker, we support more or less all of the features in SQL Server on Windows. There are some things like file table, for example, is very closely tied to the Win32 file system. We don't support that, but yeah, always encrypted, transparent data encryption, in-memory OLTP, in-memory column store, all of those things we support. So other question is, do we support Windows authentication on SQL Server on Linux? Not just yet. Windows authentication is a little bit of a complex subject. So we will never support Windows Auth because that's actually using a local Windows account to log in, and that doesn't exist. But AD Auth we will support. So that's coming. There's another question? Good question. So what about supporting SQL Server integration services? Yeah, we're working on that. So that's also coming to Linux. Last question, yeah.
Yes.
So the question is, can containers be part of an always-on set? Yes.
So that's a fairly complex subject, though. So if that's interesting to you, please come talk to me afterwards. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So then I'll go and do the commit. So now we're creating the big, if you will, dev image. So every time I commit, I write out what's in the image right now to the file system, and we can list the images we have now. And now we can see we have the pre-prod, we have the big temp image. And next, we're going to shrink the database to create the smaller dev image. And right now, the shrink is a very simple thing. Right? I just run a delete statement. There are smarter ways if you want to shrink faster, right? But this goes now and removes, you would run this to remove a bunch of data to make sure that for your CI pipeline, your unit test, you don't have to download a 1 terabyte image or whatever it is. So that's done. And next step is to obviously commit this image. And then I've created kind of the basis for all of the images we need, pre-prod, big dev, small dev. Now the next step is I'm going to just remove the container that I was using as the basis for these images because I don't need it anymore. So rm-f will delete the container and also stop it in the same time. So Docker PS, we can see we have no more containers running. So next step is, if I, this is not sure that you want to do, but if you want to make sure the images are as small as possible, you may want to flatten them. So I'll start a new image from the DB dev small temp that I just created. And from this image, I'm gonna go and do flatten so I can get a smaller image. So we start that, we run the export command, and that's gonna create a new image that doesn't have all of the container or image layers before.
Now you may want to keep your layers in there because the layers are cached. So it kind of depends on what you wanna do. If you squash your image by doing this export-import approach, then you'll end up with a smaller size image, but it will be one layer, right? And so it won't be, it won't have the cache of all the like operating system layer, and you know there may be multiple layers. Sometimes images have like you know 6 or 7 layers in them, so you can kind of choose which way you want to go with this. But.
And then I just go and do something wrong, go and delete the small image. Okay, that was done. This okay. So let's see Docker images. So now we have the DB dev small. That's the flattened one, and it's down to 1.3 gigabytes in size. And then you do the same thing for the big one, start a new container based on the temp thing. We run the export command again to squash and flatten it to make it smaller. And then after this, I'm basically done. Now I have all of these images created, but I have them locally on my laptop, or rather in the Azure VM right now. So next step, and so this is interesting, right? If you think about this from the pipeline perspective, this was all running in some kind of protected environment, right? Because it has all of this real production data. So it's running in this protected VM or whatever. And now the next step is to publish these images. So you publish probably the pre-production image to some protected place, and then you publish the other two to the dev environment where the developers can go and just pull them. So now we see we have DB dev big, DB dev small, I haven't deleted this one yet, and DB pre-prod. So next step is just go and build these images using a Docker file. The only thing we do here in this Docker file is make sure that it runs, it starts SQL Server when you start the image, because when I flattened it, it lost that information from the SQL Server image. So we can just look at, this is the Docker file. You can see it's very simple. So from the DB dev big, then run SQL Server when it starts. And now I'm in the wrong. There we go, and build a small guy. And then next step is to tag them and push them to the repository. So this is pretty interesting. You run this on some machine, you know, takes whatever amount of time, the big amount of time is obviously copying the data around. But once this is done and pushed, now all engineers have availability to just go and pull down the Docker image they need. The small one, the big one, or the pre-production environment. And it gets very, very smooth development for that sprint. Next time you start the sprint, you just run the same script. Now you have 3 fresh images with the latest data. And if you keep the images around, then obviously you can go back and get the previous sprint's image and see if something was different if you run into issues.
So one probably key thing there is as you push these images up, you'd probably want to put the pre-production one that has the unsanitized production data in it in some other registry that is locked down.
Yeah, right? Yeah, exactly.
And the developers can have access to ones that are sanitized.
Exactly.
So let's talk a little bit about a real-world example of this. We actually used Kubernetes inside of our SQL Server engineering team to do all of the testing, all the automated testing of SQL Server on Linux. So every day we spin up 150 VMs in Azure. We have Docker engines spread across all of them. It's managed by Kubernetes. It's a gigantic Kubernetes cluster. And we spin up about 700 containers across all of those nodes and execute all of our tests. We have something like 1 million tests that run every day against our environment. And so in that way, actually, SQL Server on a Linux container is sort of the most tested configuration for SQL Server on Linux because we do all of our automated testing inside of containers. It's kind of an interesting real-world example of how you can leverage containers for doing your automated testing. So when it comes to production, though, Is there a demo slide after this?
No, mention this and then you should.
Okay. So a couple of things about production, SQL Server, and containers. this is an emerging technology. The containers started on Linux. It started with ephemeral applications that don't need to have data persistence. They don't need to have high availability and so on. And as the container ecosystem is maturing, more and more customers are becoming interested in running workloads like SQL Server and other database engines inside of a container platform like Kubernetes or OpenShift or Docker Swarm. And so the data persistence part of containers is still relatively new. It's been out for about a year, year and a half or something like that, and they've been adding in this capability to the container platforms, and all the hardware vendors are getting involved in providing their plugins for these things. And it's getting pretty sophisticated, but it's still just kind of fresh, right? It's a little bit new. And there's not really a good story for containers to have HA, like having a cluster, if you will, inside of a container platform. And so for now, we recommend that people run workloads which just don't really require that HA, right? And don't put anything super mission critical on your container platform. But one thing that's very important to us is that we work with the ecosystem, the partners that we have in Docker and Red Hat and so on, to continue to evolve this container ecosystem to the point where it can be a viable location for you to run your most critical workloads on it. And I just look back in history, right? We had the same sort of conversations going on when virtual machines first came on the scenes, like whatever, 15 years ago when I had more hair, right? And over time, best practices emerged, people figured things out, and now most people run their SQL servers in VMs, right? And I think the same type of pattern will happen with containers. It's just that we're early in this cycle. But what we want to do is we want to invite you to engage with us and work with us and try to work through these scenarios and figure out, okay, what are the best practices? How are the ways that we can do these things? What kind of tools do we need and so on? So definitely, you know, engage with us and work with us on this. We're looking forward to kind of see what we can do.
So why don't you show us how we can use these images we just created?
Okay. Demo Fury resumes. All right. Okay, so I've got the Contoso U application up here. It's on my GitHub profile. We'll give you the link at the end of the session. But let's say that I'm going to now git clone this project down to my environment. Okay, so I've got the code down here. Now let's just run Docker images, and you can see that ahead of time, we published the images up to the Azure Container Registry ahead of time, just because it takes a while to push them up there and pull them down. So the same thing that Tobias pooped out there when he built all the images, we pushed up to the Azure Container Registry, and I've already pulled them down into my environment here. Now one of the nice things about this is that I can have this idea of a Docker Compose file. So let's look at, let's go here. Let's open this up. Now, a Docker Compose file allows me to compose an application from multiple container images. So in this case, I have a web container image, which contains my .NET code, and I have a DB container image, which is based on this image that Tobias produced and pushed up to the Azure Container Registry, and I've already pulled down in my environment. And so with just one command, I get my code down, and now I can Docker compose up my application.
If you're in the right directory. You should really be in the right directory.
I really should. CD, Contoso U.
I would never do that.
Docker compose. Okay, so now Docker compose up, what it does is it goes and builds all the images according to the Docker compose file. And so you can see here that it's building the application container image, and then it will run all of the containers. And if, by the way, if I didn't have any of the images that this application depended on, it will pull them down, right? So if you go and grab like some of the applications that I have up on my GitHub repo, all you have to do is git clone, Docker compose up, and you have a running application. Super beautiful in terms of just how you can share an application across multiple people on your team and just quickly get a running environment going. So you can see SQL Server coming up here now. The applications come up. And this is based on the small data set that Tobias built, right? So once the application is up here, we'll take a look at what that data looks like. Okay, so the application's up now. Go to localhost 8000. And here comes the app, right? So just like that, I've got the app running. And now I can just go in here and I can look at the students, right?
It has sanitized data using Norwegian encryption.
There's Norwegian encryption, and you can see that I only have about, 10 or 20 or whatever it was, you trimmed it down to number of students in the database, not the million that's in production, right? So, okay, that's cool, but now let's try to do something kind of interesting here. Let's say that I wanted to use the big data set. I just go in here, change this to use the big image, and I Docker compose down these containers. Now, the interesting thing about this is, like, I could just use any image that Tobias produced. I could use big, I could use small. If I was in a production pre-production environment, I could use the production data set that we produced and just run that in my pre-production environment just by changing the image name here, right? So I could actually have multiple different Docker compose files and spin up the right set of container images that I wanted to have. Okay, so now let's just do Docker compose up again. And we'll see that now it'll come up, but it'll come up with the big data set, right? So same kind of thing will happen here. And we'll come up with the big data set. So this would be more appropriate if I was doing some performance testing or something kind of like you mentioned, right? All right, SQL Server is coming up. And it should be up now, and now it's running the application code. Okay, now we go back out here, localhost. 8,000. And we can see that we still have the encrypted data, but as I page through this, you'll see that I have way more students, right? So this is just an easy way for me to have different sizes of data set, but it's all encrypted and clean. Now, let's do something else here. Let's go and make some code changes. So let's say we want to now make some code changes to our database, right? So we want to modify the model. So this is an entity framework core application that we built. And so if I go and I start changing some of these files here, let's search for the right thing. Okay. So there's going to be a new property we're going to add to the person class. And then we're going to expose that through the controller. And then we will add it to the details page. This is how I do my development. I just remove comments.
It's very practical.
Yeah, it's much faster. Okay, so now that I've done that, now I can create a migration, right? So I'll just go over here, and I'll .NET EF migrations add SSN. And this will go out and it will create a migration that will add this new property to the person class so that it shows up in my application. Okay, so good. Now I've got my migration. And now what I'm going to do is I'm going to go back here and, oops, where is it? Okay, so I'm going to stop these containers. Docker compose down. Okay, now I'm going to do something a little different here. So instead of just Docker compose up the application again, I'm going to Docker compose build. I want to rebuild it, and then we're going to run it again. Now, an interesting thing about this, I'll show you this while this is spinning down. Let's go look at some files here. So in this Docker file for the application here, this is what's used to build the web application container image. And you can see that it executes bin bash entrypoint.sh. So let's go look at what entrypoint.sh is. So this is the script file that's executed every time this web application container comes up. And you can see here that it does a very interesting command, which is .NET EF database update. So I've produced a migration now inside of my environment here. And while that's building, I'll explain the rest here. So I've added a migration, I've compiled this, and now I have a migration ready to go. The next time I spin up this environment, the app container will come up, it'll execute this entrypoint.sh script, and it will do .NET EF database update, and it will push that migration into my database, right? So in this way, I can kind of move all of my schema changes along with my application as it goes through my entire CI/CD pipeline, and when it gets out to production, that's how I deploy all of my database updates, so that I'm actually running the same thing all the way through my CI/CD test pipeline that I'm doing in production. Okay, so now we'll Docker compose up the application again. And this time, you'll notice here at the end that it kind of pauses after it says that SQL Server is starting up. That's the point at which the entrypoint.sh script is running, and it's calling the .NET EF database update command. So right here is running .NET EF database update.
It should be worth noting that one of the biggest, one of the things that we focus quite a lot on in SQL Server is online operations. So being able to add schema changes, change indexes, all of these things online without having to take the database down.
Right. So now if I go in here to edit, you can see that I have an SSN field, and I can save it. And I can view the person's details. Oops, did I do the other one? Maybe I lost the person that I was editing. But you can kind of see the idea that I can add my database extensions and kind of get that going, right? OK, so now let's say that I was ready to start pushing this out to production. So what I would do is kind of similar to what Tobias was doing earlier. I would do a Docker build, right? So I would Docker build dot. Actually, I'm in the charts here. So I would do Docker build dot, and then I'd give it a tag like Contoso U, and then I would produce this build, and then I would push it up into my Azure Container Registry. So now let's say that I'm ready to start deploying it out into my CI testing environment, or the scheduled test environments for like perf runs or something like that, or I want to start pushing that into production. So one way that I could do that is I could deploy this out onto a Kubernetes cluster. Now, one way to deploy onto a Kubernetes cluster is to use what's called a Helm chart.
What's this Kubernetes thing?
Oh, Kubernetes. It's a beautiful thing. So Kubernetes is let's go into here. So Kubernetes is a container platform. And so what you do is you deploy multiple nodes that all have Docker engine running on them, and then there's like a controller node. And the controller node, you talk to it through an API, either through a web UI or through a CLI, and you tell it to deploy containers. And these containers are deployed in what are called groups of pods, and you tell it to deploy it, and you give it some special instructions about how you want to deploy it, and it will push those containers out onto the nodes. And it will take care of load balancing and placement depending upon the availability of the resources in there, and it takes care of resuming containers if they get whacked for some reason. And so it kind of provides this high availability distributed architecture of kind of like, think of it as like a container hosting fabric, if you will. So that's what Kubernetes is.
Could you run this on Azure?
Yes. So we push the images up to the Azure Container Registry, which is a service in Azure that hosts your images. And we also have Azure Container Service, which is a place where you can run a container platform like Kubernetes. We also have the other container platforms like Mesosphere, DCOS, and Docker Swarm. So you can run any one of those three, and it's a hosted environment, and it's backed by Azure Blob Storage as your persistent data store. So now what I'm going to do is show you just kind of this chart, right? So the chart has some simple metadata that defines the chart and how we're going to deploy it. And then in the deployment.yaml file here, you can see that I have two containers defined. So I have the container for DB, and I have the container for web. And these are based on different images as defined in the values.yaml file here. So the web is based on the DB, or on the Contoso U web, and the DB is based on DB dev small. Right? So I can kind of compose together, similar to Docker compose, I can compose together an application in a Docker, or in a Helm chart, and then I can deploy that application into Kubernetes using a simple command line command here, right? So what we'll do here is we'll just do helm install Contoso U. And this will push my application up into Kubernetes. So now if I go to the Kubernetes UI, which I have a replicated proxy server here on my local machine, I can see that it's now created a new deployment out there, and the deployment defines how the containers are deployed. It created a new replica set, which defines how containers are managed in terms of having multiple replicas of the containers. And I have a pod which has been created, and the pod here is where the containers actually run. So if I drill in here, I can see that within this pod, I have two containers. I have the DB container and the web container. And we can start to go in and view the logs of these, right? So I can go in and look at the DB container that's come up now, and you can see the SQL Server is started. And I can pivot over to the web log, and I can see that this is up and running now. And then by deploying this through a Helm chart, it's also created a service for me. And as soon as the service finishes deploying, then we will be able to access the application. Oh, come on.
Great.
Normally, this is very fast. Well, let's keep going, and then we'll come back to this.
We believe you. Cool. So how can you tell us a little bit more about this potentially running?
So if we're going to run it in production, we need to have a persistent data store, right? So in this particular case, I wasn't using persistence because it's a test environment. So I don't really care about persisting the data. But in production, we'd actually want to create what's called a persistent volume claim in Kubernetes. And that means that I have a persistent volume that I can mount to my containers. And that data is then stored on Azure Blob Storage for my highly available persistent redundant storage. So to upgrade is kind of an interesting process. What you do as a first step is you pull down the latest image, right? In this case, it would be the latest SQL Server binaries, whatever additional files you wanted to have in there. And once you have that there, then you would stop your currently running container, which will get rid of that container, will get rid of the mount to that persistent storage, but your persistent storage still hosts your database files. They're still there. They haven't gone away, right? And then you Docker run a new version of the container based on the dbprod latest image, and you mount it back to the persistent volume storage. And the SQL Server will wake up. It will see the master database file sitting there, and it will see that inside of that master database file, it knows about this Contoso University database and those files that are associated with it. And voila, you've got SQL Server now running with your Contoso University database again. And the nice thing about doing this is that, kind of how Tobias showed, is that you can actually do upgrades this way, right? So whenever you upgrade a version of SQL Server, there's also some things that happen as part of that upgrade sequence. When it sees an older version of master database, it runs some upgrade steps. And so in this way, you can have a continuous release of not just your application, but also the SQL Server binaries as you pick up the latest versions from Microsoft.
So, remember this, that we mentioned that this running SQL Server in production on containers is something we strongly believe in, but it's kind of in the early phases, so that's something that we're spending a lot of time on, figuring out what are the best practices, how should you do it, what's the HA story. We're working also on a Windows container story for this. But hopefully you got a sense in this session of that we really want SQL Server to be a great citizen inside the modern data center. So whether you're using Linux, whether you're using Docker, betting on some of the new container management technologies such as Kubernetes, OpenShift, and so on, we want SQL Server to just be a great citizen there if you want to run it there. That's really our goal. And hopefully you got a sense of that this is pretty different from installing and managing SQL Server of before. So we're taking this really, really seriously, and it's a huge commitment from our team to make sure that SQL Server is a great citizen where you want to run it. So if you want to take a look at these, what we showed you, we have the whole demo on Travis's GitHub repo, including the setting up the images, the Kubernetes, Scooby-Doo files, and all of those things. We also have Travis's humor here with Git involved. it's amazing. We also have two actually very good websites. If you're interested in using SQL Server from other environments than maybe C# and .NET, we have a Getting Started site that shows how you use SQL Server with C#, Java, Node, PHP, Python, Ruby. We'll have a Go one here as well soon. And then if you go there, you can say, you know, pick your environment, and then the tutorial will go through everything from, you know, getting SQL Server running in the environment to building your first app, getting a driver, getting an ORM framework, and basically getting going.
And notably, we're going to soon expand this site to have some specific tutorials and scenarios around DevOps in particular.
Yes. Right?
So check out that later.
And same thing when it comes to machine learning. So we have a machine learning site that's the aka Microsoft, aka.ms/mlsqldev, with examples of how you can run in-database machine learning using R, or as we announced for SQL Server 2017, we're adding Python support. Otherwise, hopefully you got some information about how SQL Server fits into the new data center, and we'll stick around here for more questions. Thank you very much for coming.
I can't leave the demo undone, so let's just start this.